Regardless of the CMS, we tend to focus on making sure all the plugins or add-ons are the latest versions before the CMS itself. And then we upgrade one at a time using the CMS audit spreadsheet as a guide. I usually, like, after I make that spreadsheet, I add another column where it's just basically I check it off to make sure that that specific line item or that specific plugin has been dealt with. And if you remember from part one, that list includes the current versions, core software, version support, and other, you know, notes. So we have that list ready for us. And as I mentioned, I add that column to check off if, you know, something goes well, but it also gives us a way to add notes if something goes wrong. So going down our audit list one by one, we can more easily identify if there's a specific plugin breaking things if something breaks.
Mm-hmm. And if a listener's like, that seems tedious and like not efficient, then don't do it. And eventually it'll come bite you in the ass. Because the only reason we do this is eventually it got us.
From Bright Umbrella, this is Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, it's part two of CMS upgrades and migrations, the technical aspects of upgrading or moving away from your content management system. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is sponsored by ArchisTech, who hosts this very show. Have ArchisTech's helpful support team manage servers for you so you can focus on designing and developing client sites instead of getting stuck with sysadmin work. As an official Craft CMS hosting partner, they have various plans optimized for Craft, and you can pick between two US locations and the EU2. Sound good? Take 15% off the first 3 months of your single or multi-server monthly plan with the discount code CTRLCLICK116. We'll spell it out in the show notes. It's valid until the next episode airs, so sign up today at ArchisTech.com. This episode is also brought to you by Vast Conference. With the integration of HD audio to WebMeeting, you can collaborate with clients using your laptop's integrated mic and speaker. No software or hardware required. This means that no matter where you are in the world, you can connect with your clients or prospects easily without the need for dial-in numbers or per-minute charges. Need to jump on a quick call with a colleague? Vast's instant conference call feature allows you to do that as well. Build your business from anywhere knowing you always have a conferencing provider that has your back. Visit conferencecalling.com to start hosting conference calls and online meetings that are truly fast and easy for everyone. You can get a 30-day free trial by visiting conferencecalling.com/trial30 or by calling one of Vast sales reps and mentioning you heard of Vast Conference on Control ClickCast.
So we had planned to continue our conversation that we started a few episodes back with Timothy Bard-Levins about diversity in the tech industry this morning, but we had to change direction due to a family emergency with our guest, Fabian Elliott. We're definitely rescheduling with him. That's still in our queue.
So for today, we're going to continue a different conversation, tackling CMS upgrades and migrations. Mm-hmm. In part one, earlier this year, we tackled the often confusing decision about whether to upgrade or migrate to a new CMS from a client perspective. But what happens after you make that decision? What are the technical considerations for an upgrade or migration?
There's no easy button to just execute an upgrade or migration, which is why we're doing this part two, because there's a lot of nuances that we've come across in the many, many, many years we've been doing CMS development. Mm-hmm. But for the purposes of this episode, we're going to focus first on what we call like a general upgrade, next steps and technical considerations, and then we'll tackle migrations. And when I'm say like general upgrade, we're sort of talking about a quote unquote typical upgrade path, even though there's no such thing as typical, but meaning like where we're upgrading the CMS within the same brand and either within the same version or just moving by like maybe one version, not skipping multiple versions. So For example, upgrading EE 2.5 to EE 2.11 or even EE 2.5 to version 3. But like an upgrade from EE 2 to EE 4 to us, for our clients, is a non-typical upgrade. Even though we're still in brand, we're still using Expression Engine, the version differences are so great that we have to do an export and import, maybe even some custom development. Mm-hmm. And so for that, we consider that a migration. And yeah. So we're lumping that scenario into the migrations discussion.
Right. And basically there's going to be overlap, mm-hmm. but there are some nuances that's more specific to upgrades than migration and vice versa. So let's just get started.
Yeah.
First things first, technical planning, mm-hmm. planning for environment and content workflows.
Yeah, I think this is one of the things that we did not do so great in the beginning,
right?
You know, like the start of whatever, 12 years ago when we started doing
stuff like this.
Because it's only after like screwing things up a couple times or encountering problems that you figure out how important the basics are. And this is really important if it's a brand new client or an old client who hasn't been able to invest in their site or CMS in a while. So you have to make sure that those environments have version control in place, not just a repository for, you know, let's say you and me, Leia, to develop,
right.
but like established workflows that the client understands. And by established, I mean documented workflows.
Yeah. And if any of that isn't in place, you just need to get it in place.
Yeah. And not just getting into place, you're probably going to need to educate your client.
Yes.
In our experience, version control is still a new concept for a lot of clients, especially if they're on a legacy CMS, a legacy host, legacy protocols. You've got to take time to prep your client so they understand these modern development practices. It will help you with your immediate upgrade, but it also ensures that your future upgrade and, well, I mean, even migrations will be easier because everything is on version control. And I mean, Leo, we're literally in the middle of this process.
Yep. We're moving a new client with no version control
mm-hmm.
to our environment with version control.
Mm-hmm.
And a big part of that is the training and client education. It was really interesting because, you know, when you and I, we are in the industry, and even when I'm talking to the client contact, she's a designer and she's the one handling the site. She got the importance of version control.
Mm-hmm.
But we had to do extra work in finalizing the sale, essentially, with her
like
upper.
Convincing, yeah, the people above her.
Right, exactly. And we had to very specifically bullet point explain how they're actually losing money and mm-hmm. wasting time without version control in place. Mm-hmm. And this was even true exactly because there was exactly an issue just last week mm-hmm. where something broke and nobody knew what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's no way to understand when it broke, who touched what, and it just wasted everybody's time
mm-hmm.
trying to figure all of that out. And with all of that said, now we're moving this client into a training plan for version controls that those types of incidents no longer occur.
Mm-hmm.
Or when they do occur, there is specific steps to rectify the issue
mm-hmm.
before spending 2 hours just staring at something and nothing changes or works, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, step really is just getting them to understand when they shouldn't be on the site.
Yeah, but, you know, I think it's worth mentioning because there may be some listeners who are like, oh, how often is that going to happen? This is not some really old CMS this client's on. They're on Craft.
Yeah, they're on the latest version of Craft 2.
And
yeah.
we're inheriting them from an agency, you know, that's doing yeah. current work. This is not something that has been neglected.
Right.
And so the fact that they didn't have version control established, I think that's more common than people realize that
right.
it's, and that when you're dealing with CMSs, 9 times out of 10, I think anytime you're dealing with flat file like Statamic, that sort of is the exception that proves the rule.
Right.
But if you're dealing with the database, then this is something that has to be in place, not only between the developers, but with the client. It
right.
has to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also want to state that the reason it's common, but it's fixable. Like Emily and I, years ago, especially when we were just independent, we didn't have version control in place ourselves, right? So like a lot of our clients over the years, we've had to transition our own clients to version control. So, you know, this is not to say to like shame anyone for developing anything without version control. It's just, it's one of those things that, especially when budgets are in concern and then when you're actually dealing with the realities of fixing these issues, version control is a must.
Yeah. And I think this isn't just to ensure that technical implementation goes smoothly and that your client understands it. You need to be aware of this so you are estimating properly.
Yes.
Because version control isn't hard to set up, especially the technical aspects, but educating a client, that can take longer. So make sure you're factoring that in and pricing for it accordingly. That's one of those things that can bite you later.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then once you get the client to understand the version control concept, the protocol, then it's really about having a conversation for planning how content is going to be handled during the upgrade.
Right. So, you know, as Emily mentioned, Statamic is kind of the exception because it's a flat file. But if you're using a database-based CMS, there could be potential conflicts with the content clients are updating on their live site while you're developing locally or on staging.
Yep.
So the first thing you need to do is coordinate how you want to handle content holds. You need to set expectations about content duplication, testing, and how you're going to handle that as well.
Yeah. And once again, we're in the middle of doing this with this brand new client. And we just addressed this particular conversation yesterday with a client. Leia, why don't you share tips for how we've kind of developed an efficient approach to this?
Right. So I kind of made a hint earlier. We document everything. Yeah. And even if it is straightforward, because at the end of the day, content hold is don't test the site when we're developing on the site. And if you do, make sure you make note of it. That's it. That's it in a nutshell. However, in reality, clients don't know actually what that truly means in terms of like step by step by step. So in order to remove confusion and make communication much clearer, we created a documentation, and this is templatized. So like once we create the first time we document this for one client, we make sure that that's saved for like any future clients. And then we just go through a step-by-step process on letting them know, hey, from this day to this day and from this time, we need to make sure you're out of the system so we can make sure that our local systems, our dev systems, our staging systems are one-to-one with live.
And, you know, additionally, like Leia hinted to, if they're going to hold or track their content on live, meaning, and that's how we refer to it to the clients. We give them that option. They can hold and not enter any content in live while we're doing development, or they can enter content in live and just track it. And we recommend that they create some sort of internal spreadsheet where they can track what was added to live, the content, who, when, so that when the system is back and ready for them, all upgraded, they have an easy reference to populate it so that live and development become one-to-one again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, and I think before we move on, don't forget server setup in your environment prep. If an upgrade or, you know, migration demands PHP 7 the way Craft 3 now does, it could affect how you plan the upgrade and your client setup. So make sure you get as much of the final server details in place in your dev environment as possible so that you're kind of, again, working with a one-to-one situation. Yeah, okay, so with that, environment's good, check. Content planning is good, check. Next, planning and prep specifically for an upgrade.
Right. So before we dive into the development side, I know we're already a few minutes into this podcast. We haven't even dived into the development side. And that's on purpose because we need to make sure that everything is prepped properly. And with that in mind, two assets should be on hand.
Let me interrupt you, Leia. Maybe we should say why they need to make sure things are prepped properly. Like, why is it important to, like, have this stuff in place? I mean, I can think of times I've upgraded and didn't have systems in place, and the client called and said, well, we had a bunch of content on live that's no longer there. What happened?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh my God, I complete, you know, this is back in the day, but that's what forms our best practices today. That's not an incidental thing for a client. You know, they have their own time frames and resources, and they have to enter content twice, especially if it's like in the middle of a campaign and it was a lot of content, you're going to have a very upset client.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, so that's an issue in the client side. The development side is just purely, you don't know what just happened. If something broke, it just takes so much more time to figure out, like, what did I do wrong? Because there are so many moving parts. And as developers know, it could be as stupid as a typo. Right?
Yep.
So if you have a process in place, you could systematically go step by step and figure out what the problem is or prevent the problem from happening in the first place.
And then, of course, for those of you who are already familiar with version control, you know that that gives you a really useful way to examine what some of those changes may have been.
Exactly.
All right. So sorry for interrupting you. You were going to get into the documents that we use to sort of guide the upgrade process.
Right. So in part one, we talked about the CMS audit. So that should always be in front of you when you're prepping for the upgrade. And the other thing that is in line with what we just talked about is a gotchas document. We started creating this essentially because of all the things that happen during an upgrade. And so before I even begin a new upgrade, I always have a gotchas document open. And during an upgrade, I always have that document open. It's really become a useful tool to highlight what could be problematic with specific installs. And we know that because CMSs can be extended and customized in so many different ways that you need to have a way to reference these nuances so you can deal with it sooner than later.
And like Leah was saying about the client version control content hold slash tracking document that we have, that's like a template, that gotchas document has been a template that we start from. But recently we started doing a client specific gotchas document, sort of like, you know, like our internal development notes for that client. So we've got the global one that's relevant to Expression Engine, or the global one that's relevant to Craft or Statamic. But we've also been doing one that's really, really specific to the client about their setup. That way you have an at a glance view to make sure you know what's going on. And to be a reference for yourself the next time.
Yeah, exactly. So some examples from our gotchas doc includes bugs or a lot of times PHP deprecated methods, especially if they're using older plugins, highlighting those specific plugins that's no longer supported means outlining the hacks that need to be in place in order for the upgrade to work, and then referencing the links to solutions. So not just writing down what the problem is, usually I try to link and figure out a way to reference back what the solution was in the first place. So if I have to refer back, I have context over why the fix was this fix. And there's a lot of QA things in this document too. So for example, in Expression Engine and Craft, to upgrade a plugin, it usually means just replacing the plugin folder and the new plugin folder. But that might override custom configs, right? Because some of these plugin folders have like a config.php that you point a different folder to or something like that. And you need to remember that custom styles and configs are backed up.
Yeah, so eventually at the end of a project, we review what we learned, the gotchas for that client, and decide if anything needs to be added to our internal templates. Everything we do influences the future projects. It's kind of core to our deep experience with CMSs. Like, we literally have a knowledge base from our 12 whatever years it is of building CMSs. And we're continually using them. We're continually evolving them. And it makes us better each time. The project's faster, the upgrade's more efficient, and, you know, more profitable for us.
And I want to point out, even if you've done upgrades for a specific piece of software several times already, there's always going to be some new gotcha. And that's why you always have to be mindful of nuances in between versions. For example, Expression Engine has version-specific notes that specify in that version if it needs a specific tweak, mm-hmm. right? And while, for example, Craft is 99% one-click update, there's been a couple of instances, because we've been working with Craft for years now, mm-hmm. that a manual upgrade was requested to get to the latest version.
You know, I feel like it's worth emphasizing that this is even more true if you're working with an inherited or a legacy system or like a CMS you built but haven't touched in years. You know, just once again, don't just assume that it's it's a simple EE upgrade. I've done a dozen of those. I've done two dozen of those. You could screw yourself in the sales process by underestimating the potential conflicts that can happen.
Exactly. So that's a really good point. The gotchas document could be useful sales tool too. Mm-hmm. You know, if you know that a certain plugin has traditionally been a gotcha, that's a major part of the prospect CMS, then you can factor that time in and factor, you know, the costs for replacing it, mm-hmm. right? And give the client explicit info. You know, in our experience, this will take XYZ because we did just that for another client on the same upgrade path. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The main thing is you have to have some sort of reference or library of knowledge to pull from to make this usually painful process of upgrading a little less painful.
Yeah. So let's get into the upgrades. You know, we're not going to go through every upgrade step. Yeah. That's up to you to review in your CMS's documentation.
Though we will include links in our show notes to the upgrade docs from our preferred CMSs, which are Craft, EE, and Statamic.
Yeah, cool. So what we are going to share are some of those specific nuances to consider while you're going through an upgrade. And once again, a reminder, the fundamentals, your first step, back up everything. And because you've got your version control in place, push that back up as a revision so you can easily roll back. And to be extra specific, that revision needs to include the database. An export of the database needs to be in that.
And that's easy to say and easy to forget. Yep. So that's why we're saying it.
Yep.
In fact, and why don't you share how we manage our databases for clients in our ideal version control setup?
Yeah, it's super simple, I think, but we just have an established protocol for our development environments that Leigh and I use when we're working on development. So basically, we have in the local site, the project, we have a directory that holds the databases, and we have them divided by the different environment. So for example, in most of our clients have a production or a live environment or a staging or development environment, sort of depends on what their internal naming is. And so in our local projects that Leigh and I work on and have version controlled, our primary database that we work with just resides in a DB folder, but then within that folder, we have two subdirectories, one for the production backups and one for the development or staging backups. And yeah. We just always make sure that when we're doing exports or backups of any of these, we're saving them to the correct directory. And the database exports, the SQL file exports, they're also named one-to-one with either development or production or, you know, staging or live, whatever the internal naming for that client is. And it's just really simple. But Leigh, wasn't it like a year ago that I was like, this is getting out of control. We need to establish some naming conventions for how we're managing these databases. So yeah. Even a year ago, we didn't have this formally documented and nailed down. And it just got eventually to be a pain. So it's about forcing yourself to follow some sort of internal standards.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems so obvious when you say it, but I'm just looking at some of our like past sites folders. Mm-hmm. And then some of them said like dev BUP and then prod, then one said live. You know, so it's just like, okay, let's figure out what all of this actually means and have some sort of standard so that in every project from moving forward, we'll have that particular standard and there's just less confusion. And then on top of that, whenever we do push or do backups with the revisions, we mention whether the DB is required or if this was just a backup in our right. notes as well.
Right. The notes to the commit.
Yes.
Explicitly says DB required in all caps. And yeah. This reminds me, these are actually like specific tips and workflows that We learned from my former boss and current friend, Ian Pitts. We had him on the show forever ago to talk about version control, and we'll link to that in our show notes. But we actually hired Ian to train us in version control and just share what his workflows and best practices were. We documented those, and we've just sort of been evolving them since.
Yeah, absolutely. So back to the actual upgrade. Regardless of the CMS, we tend to focus on making sure all the plugins or add-ons are the latest versions before the CMS itself. Mm-hmm. And then we upgrade one at a time using the CMS audit spreadsheet as a guide. I usually, like, after I make that spreadsheet, I add another column where it's just basically I check it off to make sure that that specific line item or that specific plugin has been dealt with. And if you remember from part one, that list includes the current versions, core software, version support, and other, you know, notes. So we have that list ready for us. And as I mentioned, I add that column to check off if, you know, something goes well, but it also gives us a way to add notes if something goes wrong. So going down our audit list one by one, we can more easily identify if there's a specific plugin breaking things if something breaks.
Mm-hmm. And if a listener's like, that seems tedious and like not efficient, then don't do it. And eventually it'll come bite you in the ass. Because the only reason we do this is eventually it got us.
Right. And, you know, while I am doing that, going through that CMS audit, like line by line, plugin by plugin, I'm referencing the gotchas document that I mentioned earlier and updating that gotchas document as I go when something does eventually happen, because 100% of the time, something always does.
Right, right. 100%. There's never been a like set it and forget it upgrade from an old system. I think the only exception are systems with one-click updates like Kraft or Statamic, or, you know, maybe even a newer version of EE4. But even then, only when they've been regularly updated, meaning every time there's been a release that's been installed.
Yeah. Absolutely. And actually, as recently as this week, a one-click update that seemed to work for a Kraft client broke the contact forms. And strange as it sounds, it was hard to diagnose initially because the site's still loaded. You could still add and edit entries. And for all intents and purposes, everything should have worked. Version control showed that no other files had been edited but the Kraft core due to the updates. And Kraft was working in the rest of the site, too.
So what was the issue? Why did a simple upgrade break the site forms?
Well, the funny thing is it was a syntax error. So as I mentioned earlier in the show, something as small as a typo could be an issue to break a site. And in this case, it was a forward slash. It was a forward slash that worked for over a year of Kraft updates. And like a lot of things on the web, even if a code, you know, is malformed, depending on what it is, the software will still try to guess the intent and render it, right? In this case, the CMS upgrade became more strict about how plugin actions were called, and this one forward slash had to be removed in several JavaScript controllers, and then everything worked again.
Such a, like, edge case example, but no. You know, that's a perfect example of things to save time next time, having it in our gotchas document.
Yeah, absolutely.
Leia, can you share some other gotchas that we've documented, maybe an EE specific one or Statamic? Do we even have any gotchas for Statamic even?
Not quite yet.
That's a good sign.
But things that are coming to mind right now are a lot of EE sites are in legacy versions of EE. And right now, PHP 7 is becoming standard, rightfully so, in a lot of hosting setups. So you have to really keep that in mind when you're upgrading Expression Engine, regardless of what version of Expression Engine it is, to make sure that the DB driver is pointing to MySQL with the I at the end. So MySQLi. We use Eric Regan's EE master config. So whatever's in database.php or config.php is overridden. And if you're just doing a, quote, regular upgrade path where most of the files stay the same, except the core files, then, of course, the config hasn't been touched. If you forget to add that little I, the system won't load. Mm. Yeah, so that's like one little gotcha. Another weird gotcha, our own site, controlclickcast.com, is on an old version of EE2, but it was an even older version of EE2 a year or so ago before I tried to upgrade it to the latest version. And the thing is, there older versions of EE2 had limitations on the EXP channel data table so that there was like a maximum character limit for the field. And that's an issue because we publish our transcripts in one text field.
Super long. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so when you just do that particular upgrade, it actually broke our transcripts. And I remember I had to roll back.
Thank goodness for version control.
Right? Like I had to roll back and be like, the heck, what happened here? Why did, like, our transcripts are important to us, obviously. And then after digging into it, like I had to go into MySQL, find the table and change the actual table configuration for that field to medium text and then re-import that. So I actually had to export that one table, then re-import it when the field, the long field turned into medium text. Anyway, as you can see with the frustration in my voice, it's one of those things where it's just like, how would you have known until you're like, why is my data completely gone? And then after you troubleshoot, you find that other people have had similar issues. So, yeah.
You know, speaking of troubleshooting, what's your go-to?
What do you mean?
You know, if you have a question, are you going on Stack Overflow? Are you going on Slack?
Google. It's just always like, here's the problem or here's the error. And then I append it with Craft CMS or Expression Engine. And that you usually try to find the most recent response. And it's usually a Stack Exchange thing. Because sometimes if you get a forum one, those are really old. I just try to see what's the most recent. If it says 2017, that's usually the oldest I try to go take a look at, you know, an issue.
Cool. You know, I kind of think gotchas is a nice segue to what should be done to make sure an upgrade went well, how to do the QA, make sure everything is working. Even like those super small, non-obvious things like that forward slash you described, you know, it was only noticed when someone needed to fill out the form for that Craft client.
Right. So I think if you're going through a traditional upgrade, then there's an assumption, just going to make this assumption, that you haven't done major changes to the structure of the site. Mm-hmm. So the majority of the time, the QA should be making sure all critical pages work. You know, can you create entries? Can you edit entries? Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned above, an upgrade broke form. So call to actions. Make sure that you test all the call to actions, search forms and contact forms still work.
Yeah. Although we recently did an upgrade, we found a new thing for us to add to our QA workflow that we didn't traditionally do with a traditional upgrade. So Leia mentioned, you know, reviewing the content entry and content rendering, but you should also check custom fields. One of the EE upgrade I'm talking about actually broke custom field edits, meaning I couldn't create a new custom field for a channel. And it wasn't immediately obvious because we don't typically add new custom fields for projects, like the site stays
after it's launched. Yeah.
Right. The site is stable. But this client is an ongoing client and they had a new request that just happened to need some new fields. And it happened shortly after the EE upgrade.
Yeah. And so all the fields were borked, but it wasn't an immediately obvious problem because content entry still worked. It's the development side that was broken.
Yeah, our side.
Yeah, exactly. So in this case, it was mostly related to a PHP 7 compatibility issue, since our EE upgrade coincided with a hosting upgrade.
Yeah. And in retrospect, it was sort of good fortune. If the client didn't have this new request right after the upgrade and the hosting migration, we might not have added new fields for, I don't know, maybe at least a few months. And then by then, it might have taken us longer to narrow the problem down to the upgrade. wasting our time. So it's kind of lucky timing.
Yeah. Okay. So to sum up prepping an upgrade, make sure you have a checklist to review some common configurations and fields that you would edit as a developer.
Mm-hmm.
Like our listener, Anthony Stouffer tweeted, remember to test all use cases before declaring it finished.
Yes.
And I think that leads us to the end of our typical upgrade process and some considerations. Let's dive into a migration.
Okay.
And by migration, we kind of mentioned this earlier in the show, we don't just mean moving to a completely different system, but it's the act of exporting or moving relevant content from your current system to a newer one.
Mm-hmm.
So whether that's it's in the same brand of software or to a completely different system, it's a similar process.
Yeah. So like for our clients, as I was describing earlier, a migration can be from EE 2.5 to version 4 or EE any version to craft any version and so on. And no different than an upgrade, you still have to prep your clients about content holds and development protocols, making sure version control is in place. But what's different from an upgrade, a lot of migration prep is first identifying what needs to migrate in the first place.
Yeah, so a common misconception for a lot of clients is they think that a migration is just a technical thing.
They think everything about the website's a technical thing.
Yeah. Setting expectations as to how much they need to prepare is a big thing. You know, the reason they're migrating is because they want a site with less headaches, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things that clients need to understand is they have to clean up their current CMS.
Yeah, you know, to borrow the ideas from our demystifying series using like analogies that our clients can relate to, when you move to a new house, you're not moving your garbage. You know, you're moving the stuff you want to keep from your old place to your new place. And so the same is with the CMS. We want to make sure that we only move what's needed. And we cannot do that without our clients' participation. The reality is they know their business best. So they are the ones who most clearly can explain what is necessary to migrate. Leah, this reminds me of the really big EE multi-site to craft migration we did last year.
Yeah.
And that this cleanup step was really, really important to keep the migration efficient and keep us on budget. Can you share how you helped the client? Because am I remembering it right? They said they did some cleanup and then you even spotted some things they didn't consider?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the simplest thing is to get them to look and list all the channels and sections that they haven't touched.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty easy because you could just get them to review content that's been around for years. So if they change the listing view to show like the oldest entries and they're like, heck, we haven't looked at that page or that entire section in years. Do we need to move it to the new system? Right. Same thing with members. Right. Who are these people? Do they even work at this company in the first place, right?
Right. You're talking about admin users.
Right. Admin users, or it's not even admin users. Sometimes you just have editors or somebody they just added to change one little thing, or previous vendors, right? It's just sitting there, which could be a security issue too. So there's just an ongoing amount of education to figure out what actually is a priority here. It also gives them a chance to even explain if certain functionality is no longer needed. There was one entire channel that was completely irrelevant for this because they were using a totally different service, you know, completely. If we didn't have that conversation, we would have had to do custom PHP to duplicate that functionality. And they saved money and time because we asked them simply, are you using this?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it even becomes a conversation where they have to then kind of speak inwardly when there are situations like with lots of staff turnover.
Right.
And this is an old system because things may have been built for staff that's no longer there. And
right.
If they say, you know what, I have no idea what that's used for, that's a good idea that it's not needed to come over with the migration.
Right. And it's not like whenever you do something like this, you're always backing things up. So it's mm-hmm. not like it'll be deleted into gone, the ether right. and gone forever. But in purposes of prioritizing time and effort and development hours, we need to make sure that we clean everything up as much as possible before the migration and it's having those particular conversations. The big thing too, though, is not to even take your client's assumptions at face value mm-hmm. either, because they might be like, hey, we haven't touched this in a while. However, that stuff might still be used by other channels. So it's kind of like that trust.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Trust but verify kind of situation. It's like the sidebar widgets, right? They mm-hmm. just didn't think about it. They haven't updated it in a while, but it's in every page. And I remember it bit us in the butt because they didn't bring it up and I just took it at face value. They don't use it. But then they're like, hey, why is this not here?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. It hasn't been updated in 3 years, but this was a major part of the design and they expect it to be there,
mm-hmm.
right? So when you're thinking about what to clean up or not to export, we also have to identify what needs to be manually re-added. Oh. So yeah, that's a major part of the client participation because it might, you know, actually be faster than cleaning up or exporting or importing.
Right. It's kind of about trying not to over-engineer, sort of like you were talking about with the members. Like,
right.
Do you need to do a member export and spend time massaging the file syntax and setting up scripts for a move when you really only have 5 current active members to migrate? You know, it might take, what, 10 minutes to enter those by hand. And that's something that can save everybody some time and the client some money.
Right. Exactly. Ask yourself if this is something you or your client could or should mm-hmm. enter manually. So a lot of prep is really content review, cleanup, and then assigning what should be automated in the move and what should be manually completed.
Mm-hmm. So I mentioned the members. Leah, is there anything else that comes to mind from our recent migrations that has made sense for manual entry that maybe our listeners can be on the lookout for?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a common one, probably across the board, though I'm thinking about one particular client, certain inline code that has to be removed, right? So for like a lot of legacy systems, there's just one giant text field that mm-hmm, everybody mm-hmm. just keeps adding things to, whether it's an embed or an image or text. In more modern systems and newer versions of CMSs, you can extract specific content and have it in its own field, right? Mm-hmm. So inline code like an embed or social sharing was mm-hmm. shoved into a text field. In some ways, if it was consistently done in the text field, you could just do a mass cleanup in your export file and just delete it. Mm-hmm. But that's unfortunately not always the case. So you have to figure out, okay, which can we do automated and which does the client have to go into that entry and delete it or change it? So, you know, like in Craft, we create matrix fields. Mm-hmm. And when you're doing a mass export import, you try to just put it all in one field. But it's really best moving forward, you know, especially for the layout and especially for consistency, if each piece of content was separated, right? So some of that has to be done manually. It really all depends on what can be consistently taken out, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if, for example, like a lot of that mixed content is only in one channel or in a couple of entries, that can be done manually. If we saw that certain pieces of code was consistently entered, then maybe we could extract that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just customize your export content so that it's wrapped around the proper field so it can be associated to the proper matrix block. But not always the case.
Yeah. And I think, you know, these sort of situations that you're describing, they kind of really point back to your sales process, your scoping process.
Right.
You know, if you've agreed to give the client, let's say, for example, greater flexibility with their pages where they can, like in Craft, do the drag and drop reordering of different matrix fields. You know, they can pick and choose what types of content might be on the page. So that's dramatically different from what you're describing with maybe the legacy system, which is just one massive text field that has like mixed content in it.
Yeah.
And so in that situation, that is a bigger scope.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
if you're giving a client migrating them to a new system and all functionality is about as one-to-one as you can get, then maybe you don't need to go through that. And it can all get dumped into another big text field. That's certainly an option if budget is limited or the client is used to that workflow and wants to keep it. Again, you want to make sure that you've defined your scope so that you're not screwing yourself, especially with this one, screwing the client with unexpected, oh, you've got to manually change all this stuff.
Right, exactly. Like just setting the right expectations over what customization actually means and what moving old content, the implications that that means.
Right. So for our migrations, Leia, you do a lot of that content prep work for the export and import and the automation. Can you share some of your best practices when you're preparing content to move out, to export out of a system?
So for me, in my opinion, before you even export anything, your new CMS install, its structure should be set.
Mm.
So because you need to know where these buckets of info should go in the first place. Mm. And when you have that info, then you can have a better idea of how your exported files should be structured, right? And, you know, I already mentioned, are we importing into one big text field or a matrix, several matrix blocks, right? But I'm thinking this is really very relevant if your content has a lot of relationships.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
That's where things get really tricky because different CMSs handle related entries differently. So you have to figure out how they handle it, how they identify what is attached to what. And this gets complicated between different brands of CMSs because what if the related entry is identified by an ID number? So that ID number is completely irrelevant because entry 1234 isn't the same entry 1234 in a new CMS.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, when there are related entries, you have to import in a certain order and then re-import something on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, in terms of order, you probably should have all entry authors set up before importing entries, because
right.
those authors are associated with an entry. If you don't, which I've done, you might have to re-import content.
So how were you able to handle this with that really big EE to craft migration? Where did you begin to kind of map this out?
This is why I love local development, because if you mess up, it's not a big deal. You just test the theory. But to handle the entry ID issue, I had to figure out if there was another way that the entry was associated. In this case, the related entry titles would suffice. So when I was setting up the export files, I made sure to note that the related entry field would reference the title. And then for the first import, you know, when trying to figure out what order should I import these items, mm-hmm. I just basically chose the one that most other sections referenced first. So I just kind of looked at all the exported files and were like, which one seems to like want to pull from the most? Right. Mm-hmm. So that way it was auto-associated when the rest of the other sections and entries were imported. But there is an issue with associating a title instead of a unique ID, because that means some related entry fields had several versions of an entry associated because they might have the same title, like sidebar widget.
Right.
Why? And then sidebar widget Y again, for whatever reason they had the same title. Honestly, I wasn't able to figure out an easy way to clean that up except manually. For this client, it was sufficient enough to do that. It was like widgets that just had similar names. And for some reason, because again, it's an old system, there was duplication anyway with those widgets. That's why they had the same name. So just deleting a bunch of the related entries just made it easy. But I'm sure someone more clever than me would be able to add a unique identifier and then somehow associate that specific identifier with that title.
Mm. So when it comes to the importing, I know several types of file formats work, like CSV, XML, JSON. Any reason why you'd use one over the other?
For me, I say use what your original CMS has exported naturally. So if there's like a export tool, use whatever that export tool is using, whether that's a CSV or an XML file. I say it's good to work with what the system naturally understands.
So then,
you know, that avoids a lot of issues. And from there, you can alter as needed, right? A lot of times certain CMSs will have a preference in older versions of EE. I had to take a CSV and convert it to XML from a member import to work. And there's usually tools for every CMS that gives you a way to create an ideal export and an ideal import. I suggest using the exact protocol their tutorial gives you because it gives you, just the least amount of issues.
Right.
For EE to craft, I used Verb's FeedMe plugin and their JSON export tutorial. But I also like CSVs because it's portable and easy. The only thing is it gets confusing sometimes when you have comma delimited files and then there's HTML entities and you're trying to figure out how to properly separate columns. But CSVs are just so easy to make and deal with.
And what happens when things do go wrong?
So generally speaking, when there are errors, make sure that you use your CMS's logs as a starting point. So Craft has them, EE has them, and make sure you turn on their versions of dev mode. That usually gives you an idea where things begin to fail. But kind of mentioned this several times through this episode, the majority of the time, errors are syntax related. That means something is off in your export or import file, a typo, a deleted slash or semicolon. The worst one, here's the worst one I found, where everything was exactly as it should be, except there was a secret Windows break space.
Oh, God.
You could literally could not see it until I viewed the export file using Terminal. So normally I use something like Sublime or Notepad or something like that on Mac or whatever. And I use a Mac. So I wasn't able to see what this Windows break space was doing until I was on Terminal. And suddenly I saw this weird hash. And it also showed up on Notepad on Windows. So because of this break space, it made the CSV think there was a new data row when there wasn't. And that really sucked. And it took a while to figure out. And the short story to fix that was when I was creating this export, I just recreated it in a Mac specific suite, like OpenOffice. I was using Excel in the past. And so when I did that and then created the CSV and all that fun stuff, the break space no longer was there because it was a Mac specific piece of software. I don't know why it added that break space, but it just did.
So I think all of these little situations really underscore that QA needs to happen during the entire process. But I think even more so once the content has been migrated, once everything has been imported. Because a lot of times there's a change in, at least for us, when we do a migration, we're also typically trying to improve a client's content management workflows.
Right.
And so we don't typically want to keep them in that scenario where they've just got a big text field and everyone's shoving in HTML and embeds and all this other stuff. So for us, a lot of times a migration means there's a change in how the site is structured, or there are newer fields or an improved control panel. And so because of these nuances, when there's a migration project, we really plan, and I emphasize that needs to be considered in the sales cycle too, for a longer QA process. We just have more to test. So that means we could be taking a full week for QA instead of maybe a day or two with a straightforward update.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned the structure changes. Something really important to note is that a lot of migrations are tied with major redesigns. So QA also means checking how the front end renders. Okay. And not just that the page loads. Okay. So when Emily hands me the front end templates, you know, obviously I plug in the CMS code and move things around, cut things into its own modules. But in that process, I might accidentally delete an opening or closing tag, which breaks the page. And it could be a silent error that doesn't show up except for specific browsers. But it could have been prevented or identified sooner if I validated the rendered page's HTML.
Yeah, and I feel like this is something that should be really emphasized if there's like a discrete role between the front end developer or the front end dev and the CMS dev are two different people.
Yeah.
Because validating your templates is really important for that general compatibility across browsers. But also, if the project is requiring accessibility compliance, invalid pages breaks that. And that's a huge problem if your contract has accessibility built in. So the CMS developer needs to respect that the HTML needs to be in the same condition it was handed over to them in.
Yeah, absolutely. And the reality is you can't test every page on a site.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have a spreadsheet listing tested pages and what templates are affected so we can reference what's being affected. Mm-hmm. This is usually a page spreadsheet that started off from the content audit we talked about in part one. And then you organize by a general grouping.
Like, for example?
The rule of thumb really is that each grouping is based on a section and layout. Is it on a different section? Does it have a different layout? So if it's a news page, there's no need to check every article, right? But you should check the news landing page, at least one article, one paginated page, one category, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? Once you have that, you essentially have a matrix for testing, and you just click through all these pages and validate.
Yeah. And you know, that big EE to Craft migration last year, it reminds me that when you're dealing with that sort of new design, but with old content, you have to be careful and check that all content for the page renders. This bit us in the ass as well.
Right.
So meaning have the old page open side by side with the new page. You know, again, use that testing matrix, have a before URL and an after URL, because sometimes like maybe a little widget that no longer exists, maybe it was cleaned up or it was somehow imported differently and nothing's breaking on the page, but that little widget isn't showing up.
Right.
And it may not be obvious to you unless you're looking at the original page and you're seeing the content. And you're looking at the new page and you're not seeing the content.
Yeah, exactly. You know, with redesigns, that content was redesigned. So it's just not obvious. It's just not something obvious sometimes. I know what exact situation you're talking about. It was already imported. I just didn't load it.
It's simple. The solution's simple. But if you're not going through a really detailed, well-documented process for your QA, you might not find this out until like the day you're supposed to handle it over to the client.
Yeah.
And then it becomes an emergency and panic. And that's just not cool. It doesn't feel good. So if we can avoid that in the future, that's the kind of stuff that we're constantly sort of adding to our templated processes.
Yeah.
So I think we've covered a lot. We're past the hour mark at this point of what we do when it comes to the technical aspects of migrations and upgrades. Hopefully we've given you some practical tips to help your clients' upgrades or migrations go more smoothly. Let's just finish up with some final tips and thoughts. So Leia?
Just because it's a one-click upgrade doesn't mean it won't accidentally destroy things. WordPress users know this. Make sure you have backups and don't skimp on your QA after.
Yeah, good one. I think making sure your client understands their role in an upgrade or migration and make sure you understand your client's role so you can communicate how much feedback they need to give, how much QA they should do, all that content cleanup, and how long you should plan and schedule for. The gotchas aren't just for technical implementation, but planning for that implementation.
Yep. Prep and plan as much as possible, period. It will save time in the long run. All right. So now we've reached the end. Before we finish up, we've got our rapid fire 10 questions and it's Emily's turn. Are you ready, Em?
Yeah.
Okay. First question, what's your go-to karaoke song?
I do not have one. I do not do karaoke, but I did once upon a time embarrass myself in front of Stephanie Sullivan Ruiz and Greg Ruiz and Jeff Croft by singing Ziggy Stardust in a karaoke bar. And then learning that there's actually a certain type of song you should pick for these kinds of things, not stuff with long non-singing parts.
There are no rules in karaoke. Second question. What advice would you give your younger self?
I really should have thought of this stuff. Probably something like, there's nothing wrong with you. You're cool. Mm. You're fine. You know, you're good the way you are.
What's your favorite PG-rated curse word?
Balls. Or some kind of like, I'm like, Jesus balls. F-balls, some kind of combination.
Who is your favorite superhero?
Yeah, Wonder Woman all the way. Always been. I still wish I had been allowed to have Wonder Woman underoos as a kid.
Oh, I love it. What is your favorite time of the year?
Fall.
If you can change one thing about the web, what would it be?
You know, nasty people.
Yeah.
Like not being allowed on or something. Something yeah. like that. Like a yeah. license. You got to apply.
What are three words that describe you?
Loyal. Gosh, I should have thought of this. Organized. Kind of goofy.
What are three words that describe your work?
Detail-oriented. Standards. Thoughtful.
What's your favorite meal of the day?
Breakfast.
Finally, coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Very cool.
All right, so that brings us to the end of today's episode. Be sure to check our show notes for all the resources we mentioned today.
Control Click is produced by Bright Umbrella, a web services agency invested in education and social good. Today's podcast would not be possible without the support of this episode's sponsors.
Many thanks to our sponsor and hosting partner, Arcistech, and our sponsor, Vast Conference.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at ControlClickCast or visit our website, ControlClickCast.com. And if you like this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts or both. Links are in our show notes and on our site.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode when we hope we can get Fabian rescheduled to chat about his organization, Black Tech Mecca, and how to democratize tech in local communities. Be sure to check out controlclickcast.com/schedule for more upcoming topics.
This is Leah Alcantara.
And Emily Lewis.
Signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.